here. And today I would like to talk about spin-1, spin-liquid with the fermionic excitations. And the short outline of my talk is following. So first I would like to start with introduction and explain some material, a little bit, show a little bit data on the material which motivated our study. After this, I would tell you a story about fermionics, about our proposal, which was inspired by this material. So namely this fermionic spin-1 spin-liquid on a triangle lattice with three deconfined spin-ons, and this would include mean field approach and Gauss-Weaver projection to compare energetics of the states and look for the Hamiltonian which realizes such state. And the second part of the talk would be about, also motivated by the spin-1 spin-liquid, so I would try to study and understand what would be the effect of a spin half impurity in such a spin liquid, provided the spin liquid has a Fermi surface. And finally, I will try to give a short summary and outline. So let me start with the introduction. And I don't think that the spin liquid need a large and long introduction here. So in short, this is a state with a no symmetry breaking and this long range entanglement. And it can have top, fractionalized excitations and emergent gauge field. And in one dimension, such state is realized. In two dimensions, this state was proposed a long time ago, but still, like even now, there is a number of spin half candidates for realizing the state in two dimensions. But like we cannot say that this regular state established in any material. And if you go, if you consider like even higher spins or higher dimension, there is very few candidates with which have larger spin or which are like not two-dimensional. And in this talk, I would speak about spin-1, spin-liquid in two dimensions. So this is in principle interesting even because we have a spin-1. So spin-1 has a smaller tendency to order. So that is one kind of interesting aspect of this. So let me first speak about spin-half candidates. And spin-half candidates, I mean, there is a family of Kagome-based materials. So they have like planes or two-dimensional Kagome planes of magnetic atoms. And the most famous one is probably herbersmithite. So there is another family of so-called organics. So these are organic materials which have large molecules forming triangle lattice. And they have effectively one-half moment. Kagome is a lattice which consists of honeycomb decorated by triangles. So this is, I mean, I can draw it to you later. This is just a type of lattice. Yeah, the green dots there form a Kagome lattice, but it's pretty difficult to understand what the lattice it is. And finally, there is this hyper-Kagome lattice material, which is in principle like three-dimensional spin-half spin-liquid candidate. So recently, two related materials were discovered and proposed as a spin-liquid candidate. So the first one is based on copper, so it's spin-half, and it's a triangle lattice of spin-halves. And that one was studied by Nakatsuji and Zhu. But in this material, recently there was discovered that some very interesting physics, which is beyond this triangle lattice, takes place. So namely, this copper can exchange place with another atom from a different plane. And this is important. So I will concentrate on a related material, which is nickel-based. So it has a spin-1. And there are, like this material has been known a long time ago, but recently two new high pressure phases has been synthesized. So it's so-called 6HB phase and 6HC phase. And the thing which I'm really interested in is 6HB phase. So it has a triangular lattice of this nickel ions. And it's very interesting because...
So there's a stacking of two layers?
Yeah, there's a stacking of two layers and basically the... So there we don't expect them to be coupled strongly. So basically, if the stacking of these layers, there is a related phase which has been known a long time ago, this 6HA phase, and this one has basically these layers on top of each other. And this phase is claimed to be kind of a classical anti-ferromagnet. So it's like triangle lattice, you get 120 degree, yes? Yeah, that's what I was speaking about, this thing.
That it happened here?
It's not known.
No.
Yeah, so it's not known. So I will mention this a little bit later. So it's like triangle lattice of spin-1 nickel ions, and it doesn't order down to very low temperature. Yes?
Sir, why do you have different spins for nickel
different hot persons, they seem to have the same validity, right? In these compounds.
So
maybe it's something very trivial, but I'm not a condensed matter person at all. So just can I somehow explain it first?
So I don't think that this has something to do with like particularly with the atom. It's a question of the crystal where this guy is. So there it's found that the nickel is 2+ configuration in this guy. So this means that it effectively have two holes, and then this corresponds to a spin one because this guy would be coupled into spin one by Hund's coupling. So in copper material story is different. It would be +1 if I'm correct. So that's the configuration of ion in the crystal. That depends on how your crystal is made, basically, what kind of bonds you have there, and so on.
Okay, but I just thought that copper is also +2.
Yeah. Okay. Let's discuss this later. Yeah. So I mean. So this guy doesn't have magnetic order down to very low temperature, but it has a pretty large Curie Weiss constant, which is negative also. And this is a good insulator. So what is known further from experiments? So the samples, unfortunately, are not a single crystal. So these are powder samples. So not very much can be done at the moment before they get single crystals. And what is known is that this material displays linear and temperature specific heat. And the Wilson's ratio, which is of order of 1, and it has a constant spin susceptibility. So here is like 6 Hb, and here after subtraction of the contribution from impurities, it saturates at a constant at low temperatures. And here also you can see very nice scaling of your specific heat, linear in the temperature over large temperature range. Whereas, for example, for the 6HA phase, which is classical triangle lattice antiferromagnet, you have scaling as a T cube. So there has been a number of theories inspired by this phase because this property, so large specific heat and like Wilson ratio of order of 1, they suggest of some excitations which have large density of states. And there has been several theories inspired. So there are you can classify them as optimistic, so ones which are suggesting some exotic physics and some spin liquid physics. So these are like something that I will be talking about. So this is like 3 fermionic spinons. And there is another proposal by Zanke and others, which includes 4 fermionic spinons with a quadratic band touching for this material. And there is a more pessimistic scenario by Chen. So whereas this data is explained by a proximity to some quantum critical point. So I would have to say that these theories in some sense are motivated only by experiment. So because it's not much known about the microscopic Hamiltonian and so on, so what I'm I'm not intending to explain exactly this material, so I will be speaking about a proposal which may be relevant, but in order to establish its relevance, a much more detailed study of the material properties is needed.
So from a measurement point of view, so are we dealing here with the Heisenberg spin one model with nearest neighbor, and have these numbers meet these quantities been determined from measurements?
So that's exactly what I was speaking. So unfortunately, not much known about microscopic Hamiltonian. So you know that this is spin one. You know that these guys are supposed to be not very strongly coupled because these planes are separated by some non-magnetic planes. But exactly what are these exchanges? We don't know, and for this, like more experiments and maybe some first principle calculations are needed.
But in a strictly two-dimensional context, I think we would expect nail order, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's the case for 6HA phase. As I mentioned, this is a classical antiferromagnet, so it has triangular lattice. But somehow, like when you change the stacking of the lattices, the properties changes, and we get this new compound with this new interesting properties.
Is this a layer up here? Here looks like a picture that the only two layer comes strongly, and the other couple even more weakly.
No, I think so.
You have that picture of maybe all the layer come for the. Yeah.
No, I think that you have nickel layers, and it's basically the unit cells, so there would be just would be repeated.
So the purple things are the oxygen and ferro, right?
Yeah. And then this is a nickel kind of triangle layers.
So each layer, all the layer.
Yeah. So.
Sorry, maybe one last material question.
Yes.
For the, I think Gongchun theory is basically say the antimony and the nickel has a dipole, right? Electron dipole. Mm-hmm. So, because the charge is different.
That's from some experiments, actually.
So these dipoles are a result of finding by Nakatsuji when they have like very, very long, extensive kind of studies of this material with all different probes. But again, this study has been done on this material with copper and hasn't been done for this material. And the Gans theory, I think it more involves just a coupling between planes. So they get, in some sense, effective honeycomb lattice between these two different exchanges. And one of these exchanges comes from interplane exchange. But again, it's not known how much this thing is relevant to the material because you don't know much about microscopic hamiltonian. So let me continue. Okay, so with this, I would like to continue to our scenario and to the spin liquid, which was motivated by this material. So before going into spin liquid, let me briefly introduce what is the difference between spin one and spin half. So probably everyone is familiar with spin half, and the interesting property of spin half is that it has to describe a state of a single site with a spin half, you need only two parameters. And in this sense, you may envision this spin half as pointing somewhere. So basically, you can have a spin pointing up, and this would be this kind of picture. And then all that you can have, you can rotate the sphere in an arbitrary direction, but you can't have anything else. So spin one is different. It has more parameters, and it allows so-called quadrupolar order. So again, if you take spin one, you can have, for example, spin one pointing along x-axis, and it's good. But you can have more. So for example, there is a state which is as z equals 0 state, which is a very easy state, but if you envision it, it doesn't have any average moment, but you may think of it as a moment fluctuating in plane. So this state doesn't break your, this state breaks your symmetry, but it has a remaining rotational symmetry around the z-axis. So in order to better describe this basis, in order to better describe this spin one, we would change our basis to so-called nematic basis. So from sz equal plus minus 1 and 0, we would go to states which are labeled by x, y, and z. And then let me give some intuition about how this basis works. So then any state of a single spin one site can be described by a complex vector d, and it has like real and imaginary components. And this, just by choosing phase and phase of your wave function, you can make these vectors to be orthogonal to each other, and normalization condition turns into this vector summing to one. But the interesting thing is that now this basis is very good for describing nematic order, because in nematic order you just simply have one vector, another vector is zero, and this would give you a z equals zero state. On the other hand, if you start having two vectors, then you start having nematic order and spin order simultaneously. So for example, if you have u and v is even smaller than u, then you would have average moment pointing along the direction of their vector product, and you would have some nematic order in the direction of u. And finally, you can also describe with this basis your pure spin state. So this is coherent state as x equal 1, so spin points along x direction. And this has these two vectors equal to each other, and spin points in the direction orthogonal to them. So with this intuition, let me describe a spin using fermions and using this basis. So as we saw, our direction of spin is given by a vector product of our two vectors u and v. And this kind of can give us intuition that we can describe our spin using three fermions. And so we use a vector of fermions. They are labeled by x, y, and z. And spin operator is described just as a vector product. So then to have a proper Hilbert space, we require to have a constraint that there is exactly one spin, one fermion per site. So this constraint leads to redundancy. So you have local U1 cross D2 symmetry, and the Z2 comes just from a particle Hall transformation. So in principle, you can have here not one, but two, And you can have your moment represented by a hole rather than by a fermion. So now you're using this fermionic spinons, we can study some spin Hamiltonian, and here I'm writing some bilinear biquadratic model using mean field decoupling. And
on a triangular lattice?
Yeah, on a triangular lattice. But here, with the mean field, I want to describe the properties of my state. I don't want to study energetics. I want to get access to interesting properties. And while you do mean field, so you can write spin via fermions, and then you get something quartic in your fermion operators, and then you try to do quadratic decoupling. And this can be done using hopping and pairing of your fermions. So, and the interesting thing is that there are two possibilities for pairing. So you can have a pairing which would pair, for example.
So, is that a question?
Yes.
So is that different yet from what Sunetsugu and Zdumreski did way back, or it's the same? Is it different?
In what sense?
I don't know. You tell me.
I'm not sure.
So I understand
what you're referring to.
When the nickel gallium sulfide compound was discovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some proposal that it could be some kind of thematic phase, and I thought they introduced this kind of ideas for spin one. And I'm asking, is it the same or is it different?
Yeah, I think like similar decoupling for spin one has been introduced. I mean, I maybe don't know about that specific work. I know about work by Taikai and Ngu and others. But there, I think like they considered only this P or F wave pairing, and this P or F wave pairing would lead to a state which is fully gapped. And what is interesting here is that we can have a possibility of having this S or D wave pairing. So this symmetry of orbital pairing just comes from the properties of that a total wave function has to be anti-symmetric, and this pairing would be very interesting for us. So let's look closer, and suppose that we have this pairing between X and Y fermions, but Z fermion remains unpaired.
So the diagonal part is just constant uniformly?
Yeah, so let's assume this part to be constant with no flux, but then like there is a subtlety, so you can have a particle hole transformation, and particle hole transformation would just correspond to pi flux. So in principle, I know how to insert pi flux, but without pi fluxing, but just by doing particle hole transformation. So then this state with pairing of X and Y fermions, it's interesting because now we have two fermions gapped, and this pairing would give rise a mass to gauge field. So in this sense, the mean field is more trustable. And on the other hand, we have still particles which retain a Fermi surface. So you could envision this, for example, if you do like D plus AD pairing, and the mean field level, this state is preferred. So you can have S wave pairing, but the mean field D plus AD is more preferred. So you can envision this as the Z particles having ungapped Fermi surface, and X and Y particles have the Fermi surface which is gapped out by this pairing.
So unbroken, the gauge symmetry will be like a Z2 plus Z2?
Yeah, I think so. And but this Z2 is strange, like particle hole Z2 is kind of strange, it's, you cannot make it dynamical. So then we can study physical properties of this state. So and it appears that this gapless FZ particles would result indeed in linear specific heat with the temperature. It would result in an anisotropic spin susceptibility, and that's because you have only and that's because you have X and Y particles gap. So the X susceptibility in Z direction would be zero, but these two others would be non-zero and would be constant at small temperature. You can reproduce a Wilson ratio of order of one, which is not surprising because you have fermions, and this depends on the anisotropy in your Hamiltonian and your pairing. And you can have like other properties. And the interesting thing is that since it's a D plus ID pairing, it has a time reversal symmetry breaking and introduced with this and related higher order parameter. And also, since it's two-dimensional D plus AD paired superconductor, this X and Y fermions would give rise to a pair of edge modes. So you expect pretty exotic properties like a spin hole effect. But so we see that this is an interesting state. But now there is a question that like we don't want to believe mean field in terms of energy. So let's try to study this state. Using some more rigorous method, and the method of choice is a variational Monte Carlo.
So what does it mean that you have these two different susceptibilities for the night shift?
For the night shift, Yeah, Nick, I would say that since I would say that this list of physical properties, if you apply them to material, would be very easy to, like, this proposal would be very easy to call, to kill if you have any further experiments, or to confirm, because it's like pretty drastic thing. So, but they have powder samples, so it's high pressure thing.
But that's just because of the single ion anisotropy, right? The fact that it's zero in the z direction is
no. The fact that zero in the direction has to do with the pairing.
Sure.
So
right. Yeah. So that feature is specific to this state, but for any state, it will be some constant in the x and y directions, no matter what. Right. That will always be true.
In principle, yes.
Yeah, and the Wilson ratio, anyway.
Yeah,
so for the gap is in the gap, you mean some part of the brain zone is gap and some part is gapless?
So you mean this is like the coexistence of several fermions, and like some of them are gapped and some of them are gapless. So like here. So you have like, this used to be a Fermi surface of X and Y fermions, but it's gapped, so it's gone. But this one is gapless. So now let me ask a question again about the energetics. And let me ask a question, what is a spin model that can realize this state? So Minfield was done on this model, but we don't trust Minfield, so let's do something better. And let's do variation of Monte Carlo. So let's compare energies of different states, ordered and spin liquid states, using basically trial wave functions. So let me describe our wave functions. And after I explain wave functions, basically what we do, we plug our wave functions in the machine, which is called variational Monte Carlo, and it gives us an energy. So it's very, there is nothing trivial in the variational Monte Carlo. Like the more important point is like, what wave functions do we try? And when it comes to spin liquid states, what we do is very simple. So we take a sub-quadratic Hamiltonian and then take its ground state. And it's a very good wave function, but it's not a spin wave function. So we have to do something to make it spin wave function. And what we do a Gossamer projection. So we basically, we remove from our wave function all components where our sites are not singly occupied. After this becomes a legitimate wave function, but unfortunately, you know everything about wave function, ground state of this Hamiltonian, but once you do this projection, you cannot do much by your hands. So you need a computer and this variational Monte Carlo, which measures quantities on this wave functions. So now, depending on the ansatz, we can have a different state. So if you take no pairing, you expect to have this U1 state, which is a gauge field there. Now you can take again this odd pairing, so when all Fermi surfaces are gapped, or you can take this even pairing, and this one would give rise to the state with where one species of fermion has a Fermi surface and other two don't have a Fermi surface. But now we have to compare with the ordered candidates. So we know that on a triangular lattice, spin one would have an EL state in a pure Heisenberg model. So let's do some ordered states to compare with. And the simplest ordered state is just a product state. You take a product over all sides, but now you improve it with some correlations. You add Jastrow factors. And then you optimize over these guys and these guys to find kind of what's the best energy among this class of the state. And another state which would be important is Gutzwiller projected ordered state. So basically, you take the same old fermions, but now, instead of the including pairing, you include a hybridization on the single side. And this hybridization is equivalent to a switching on strong local magnetic field, or not magnetic field, but some field which couples to spin or to pneumatic order parameter. So then you take this state and also optimize over this yield, which determine kind of your P pattern of your order. And then all order is supposed to be kind of three sublattices. So in principle, there can be possibly longer range order, but we assume only three sublattice order. And then everything is measured again by variational Monte Carlo on a 12x12 lattice. So let's take a look at the simple model where we found the spin liquid in a mean field. And it appears that there is no spin liquid if you use variational Monte Carlo here, but there is something very interesting which can be observed here. So there is like an energy as a function of k for fixed dim. So I fixed this anisotropy to be relatively small, but it looks qualitatively the same for all these.
And, j equal 1.
Sorry? Yeah, j is equal to 1, and this is probably the function of k. And now what you, and here there are energies of different trial wave functions. So you see that in principle, if you forget about this ordered state which are based on fermions, so I have this class of ordered states which is Butzilla project ordered state. So if you forget about these two lines, you would say that, oh, like this line is not here, this line is not here, so I have a small range of my U1 state. But that appears to be not correct. And you see, as soon as you include your fermionic-based ordered state, it like the you immediately conclude that this model has an ordered ground state everywhere. So okay, it doesn't have a spin-liquid ground state, but what can we learn from here?
So
yes.
So this black lower line is also 120 degree bosonic version, right?
You mean this one?
Yeah,
this one is 120 degree bosonic.
And this green one also is a fermionic version of 120
degree. Yeah, and this becomes much better, as you can see. So
I
this one...
But they have same order, actually.
Yes, the order is the same. But like, let me... This is something interesting, and this can give us clue to where this thing can be realized. So let's stick to the point when k is equal to 1. And we see that here, like, this is the point where this all states perform the worst, and these fermionic states are the best. And what happens there? So there, the model has enlarged symmetry. It has an SU3 symmetry, and I will explain this in a second. But let me just also compare energy. So you have this fermionic-based energy, which we obtain with one variational parameter per side being like slightly above 0.6. And you have the best energies from DMRG studies, which is 0.67, which is pretty good, because we have one variational parameter, and DMRG has quite a few, as you know. So now, it appears that there is this SU3 emergent symmetry. So this point where j equal to k corresponds to a Hamiltonian, which can be written very simply. It can be written in terms of this exchange operator. And this operator just exchanges states of two sides. So it's a sum on all links of this exchange operator. But now, it's very natural to envision this operator as coming from a Hubbert model which has a three fermions. So such a physical Hubbert model with a three fermions. And then if you do this Hubbert model, then you immediately get the next order term, which would be ring exchange. And note that this ring exchange is on triangle, and it would be impossible to have such ring exchange for spin half. So for spin half, this would reduce to some two, so this would be reduced into just a product of separate terms. But here, it's possible, and you may think, like, what happens if you add this term? And obviously, that since this term comes from Hubbert model, it should favor spin liquid, because when this term is important, this means that we are close to our transition from insulating state, and there should be some strong fluctuations which would favor some spin liquid.
Can you explain why ring chain only have two key, a two chain rather than three chain? And my equivalent say you need a three chain to go around triangle.
Yeah, but you have a ring chain Hermitian conjugate, so you exchange like you do this or you do this. So now let us try to take a look at this SU3 symmetric Hamiltonian, and we already know that at point alpha equal to zero, so here it orders. And indeed, we have like very nice, like low energy of this ordered state. But now, if we move away from this point and add this ring exchange term, you will see that there is some range when this d plus id spin liquid state starts to win, and then you have some anti-ferromagnetic state which comes in. So that's very interesting. And the phase diagram qualitatively appears to be following, that you have anti-ferromagnetic order here, then you have anti-ferronematic order, and then I'm sorry, there is a misprint, it should be anti-ferronematic. So you have anti-ferronematic order here, and you have ferromagnetic order outside. So again, we found our d plus id quantum spin liquid with this pairing for a small range, and there is another interesting state which we also found in this model, and this is this 120 degree anti-ferronematic state. So in this state, we have this ferronematic order which points exactly in plane. So it like there is this three, it's like it's schematically shown by this like ellipses, this our vector D is purely real, and it points like one, like in 100 degree anti-ferromagnetic order. But that's very interesting, because this means that we don't have our FZ spin-ons. So this is another state when our spin 1 model has reduced to a spin half model, effectively. And I believe that some people did exact linearization for this model, and they are seeing at least this state. So like what happens here is not known still from exact linearization, but at least they see that at alpha large enough, they have their model, like what they have in exact linearization, they have the tower of states, which starts to measure that what you would expect from spin half rather than spin one. So at least there is some confirmation that in this region. So to summarize this part, we studied spin liquid ground state for a spin one system on a triangular lattice. And like we proposed a state with the fermionic excitations. So this state has pretty exotic properties. It's a gapless pneumatic excitation in the bulk. It has edge moles. And we found the realization within variational Monte Carlo of this state for some model, which is an SU3 symmetric model. So in principle, there are many open questions remain. So in particular, what about the microscopic Hamiltonian? So this model is very unlikely to realize in the material because it has a very large biquadratic exchange and this has ring exchanges. So there is a question about real material, and there is a question also about the ground state of this ring exchange model. So maybe it would be interesting to study it using some other methods like exact linearization, maybe DMRG. So at this point, maybe there are some further questions about this part of the talk.
Yeah. Have you examined this gap fix? You said that high is some kind of gap concept. Usually the gap phase seems the most stable, but your Monte Carlo calculation somehow gap phase is not favored.
So when we were doing variational Monte Carlo, we were trying all those states, but they are not shown here because they perform pretty badly.
Oh, I see.
So they are not shown here. So yeah.
And for the topological phase at the edge, what's do you have the spin hole effect? Or
you would have a spin hole effect.
But the hole effect is zero.
So these are spin-ons which carry spin, and they are like two counter-propagating edge modes. Like in D plus AD superconductor, so you would have expect in principle some spin hole effect.
That's the topological
thing. That's the topological thing. But it's very interesting in the sense that in principle it's also a non-trivial question what happens to this mode because there is a gapless bulk. So I have some argument which suggests that this mode should survive, but in principle it's a non-trivial question.
So because there's no gap, so you don't have any error curvature?
So there is in principle a gapless bulk. But the point is that they have very different quantum numbers. So the modes carry SZ plus minus 1, and the bulk carries basically SZ equals 0. So bulk is like gapless pneumatic excitation. So probably this mode would survive, even though there is a gapless bulk, which they are coupled to. So with this, I would like to go to a second part of my talk. Yeah?
Sorry, one more question. So for the this biquadratic exchange, I guess, do you know a possible microscopic mechanism to give you this positive K? So the mechanisms that I know, at least the simple situations, always give a negative K, but maybe there's some way to get K positive.
Yeah, I also don't know about like how you can get a positive K. So I agree that there are like several mechanisms which give you a negative K, but and this again, this is all kind of in this kind of stack of questions. So if you have microscopic Hamiltonian, and what microscopic Hamiltonian can you get for this spin one, and what is realistic? So the second part would be motivated by the same spin one spin liquid, but let me start a little bit from a different point of view. So this spin liquid phase has been elusive in a sense that it's difficult to detect. And usual signatures that as I showed you include, well, very often just a few quantities like spin susceptibility, heat capacity, and in principle there are other probes are needed and are sought continuously to pin down the spin liquid order. And there has been many proposals and like some transport probes like heat transport, like neutron scattering, phonons or impurity physics, and I would like to think a little bit more about impurity. So if you have an impurity in Fermi liquid, there is a bunch of interesting phenomena which probably most are familiar. So if you have a charge impurity in Fermi liquid, you would get just Friedel oscillations, which you can see using some STM. If you have impurity with spin, which is more interesting from a spin liquid point of view, you can have induced interaction between impurities, or Kakawai interaction. And another effect which is very interesting and very fascinating is a Kondo effect. So you can have some interplay and screening of this local impurity by your fermions in the Fermi liquid. So this Kondo effect, it is a very kind of old story. It has been a sort of, probably you can say that one of the simplest strongly correlated system, and there are many different solutions to this problem. But the one particular solution which I've been interested in is the renormalization group in bandwidth. So you may think about this problem as your single impurity in a Fermi seam. So there are some mobile electrons which are trying to screen your impurity. And then you may try to study this problem by asking how the coupling between the spin and your electron evolves if you reduce your bandwidth. So basically, there is some scattering happening in this setup, and the scattering can happen which involves this state. So scattering can happen into this state or out of this state, and you may say, let me eliminate this state and reduce my bandwidth effectively, and let's see what happens to my coupling. So this kind of approach that has been very fruitful in studies of the Kondo problem. Well, another interesting aspect about Kondo problems is there are different limits of the Kondo problem. So the impurity spin can be larger or smaller than the spin of your fermions, and there are so-called underscreened or perfect screened limit. And in this limit, if you have antiferromagnetic coupling, what happens is that at low temperatures your impurity disappears. So your impurity is gone, and you have basically a Fermi liquid. However, if you have an impurity which is smaller than the moment of your local of your itinerant electrons, something interesting would happen, and it's called overscreening. So suppose you have a strong coupling point where your impurity disappears. So you have a purity, and suppose you have your electrons which screen your impurity. But your moment of your electrons is larger than the moment of your impurities. So kind of pictorially, what happens if there is strong screening, that you would have a moment which points in the opposite direction. Now you say, oops, I have to screen this guy again, and another guy come, and you have a moment pointing in another direction, and then another guy come, so from here you can see that the strong coupling fixed point would be unstable. So there should be, and indeed it appears that there is non-Fermi liquid fixed point, which is at intermediate couplings. So now with this kind of short introduction to the Kondo physics, let's try to think about impurity in this fermionic spin liquid. So let's assume that we have spin 1 impurity in this spin liquid, and now let's assume that we don't have this pairing, but rather all spins have a Fermi surface. So you may say that this is something pretty theoretical in the sense that, okay, I found this phase, some evidence for the phase of the pairing, I didn't find any evidence for this phase of the Fermi surface, but still it's a very interesting problem. Because first of all, you would say, would you have a Kondo problem? One hand, you say yes, because they have non-Fermi liquid physics due to impurity. On the other hand, you have a gauge field there, because there is no pairing. And this gauge field is strongly coupled to spinons. So in principle, you don't know what's going to happen in this setup. So this is what I want to tell more. And I would say, before this, I would say that there are other setups with impurity in spin liquid which has been considered. But those setups involve spin half impurity, and in this sense, it's kind of Kondo physics in the regime of perfect screening. There have been studies which consider impurity in Dirac spin liquid, and also Ribeiro and Patrick Lee considered spin half impurity in a spin liquid as a Fermi surface. But their impurity is spin half, so it's basically screened, and it appears that their conclusion was that they see no influence of the gauge field or no influence of this non-Fermi liquid physics. So our conclusion would be different. So let's see what we get. So let's start with the spin Hamiltonian, and then we can go to low energy effective theory, which would include our fermions coupled to a gauge field, and we have an impurity. So in principle, we know how to treat two parts of this problem separately. So if you have a spinons and impurity, we have our screened condo in non-Fermi liquid, in Fermi liquid. So I would explain this in a second. Another part would be to have spinons and gauge field. So you have non-Fermi liquid, and you know how to describe this thing as well. So let me first review each of them separately, and then try to glue them together and see what we get. So the first part, again, is a spin, is a Fermi liquid, this is an impurity. So how can we solve this? And the easiest way would be to go to large N, but to go to large N in a pretty peculiar way. So there are two players. There are our itinerant moments, and there is our impurity spin. So we can scale both. But it appears that the simplest way to do is to scale only your spin of your itinerant moments. So you say that let this guy be large, and this guy stay to be the spin 1/2. And by this way, we go to so-called strongly overscreened limit. And in this limit, it appears that our system can be studied with RG. But the more kind of the advantage that we get that our beta function would have a fixed point at a small coupling. So what you can do, you can take your Hamiltonian, you can write your spin of fermions and your impurity spins using fermions. And you can study, within a simple diagrammatic technique, you can study your beta function. So it will be given by at the two leading orders, there will be only three contributions to your beta function. And it appears that it has a fixed point at a small n, at a small coupling, the coupling of order of 1 over n. So then this fixed point is perturbatively accessible, and you can study the property of the system around this point. So in this sense, we know what to do with this problem. So now let's try to look at another part of the problem, which is our spinons coupled to the gauge field. So there, the source of the problem is a gauge field. So in principle, we may try to do large N expansion. And in this large N expansion, we would also go from 3 to N flavors of spinons. And that would be the same as we did for a condo problem. So condo problem, again, to get an easy solution of the condo problem, you just scale the spin of your itinerant fermions and leave the impurity to be very tiny. So in principle, we can do this here, but it appears that this breaks. And this breaks due to singular self-energy, which appears from the gauge field. So if you calculate the self-energy from the gauge field at one loop, you would get a singular result, which is proportional to 1 over n, because you have like expansion in 1 over n. And this thing would spoil your Green's function, because at small frequencies, your self-energy would dominate over the bare like omega dependence. And now as soon as you dominate, as it dominates, you would get some quantities. You would get 1 over n in the denominator of your Green's function, and this would spoil your power counting. So this was discovered by Sansikli and Mitlitsky and Sajdev. And recently there has been discovered a way to fight with this problem in an easy way. And this is so-called double expansion. So in principle, you may try to study kind of not your system not in 1 over n, but you may try to study using some other counting. So like according to Sansikli, you would have to count like all planar diagrams. But that's very difficult. So you, rather than this, you would introduce another control parameter. So you would say that your gauge field propagator, your gauge field inverse gauge field propagator, would depend on your momentum not as a q to the power of 2, not as a q squared, as should be, but it would depend as a q to the power of 1 plus epsilon. And then you consider a so-called Dybbol scaling limit when you send n to infinity and epsilon to 0 simultaneously, but you maintain their product to be constant. And the success of this trick can be understood from the self-energy. So if you apply this trick to the self-energy, your 1 over n gets epsilon in front of it. So this guy retains to be singular, and this guy would be more important than your bare omega dependence. But still, you have 1 over n disappeared from this guy. So now it's not 1 over n, but there is some constant hanging out here. So then you are good. So you can do 1 over n within the scheme. So now you glue up these two ingredients together. And what you have to do is you study your flow of condo coupling assuming that taking into account that this quantum impurity cannot influence the physics of your bulk. So you have a bulk, you have some gauge field, but it doesn't influence the physics of your gauge field because it's a single impurity in a large volume. So you have basically the same contributions as before, but now you plug in there your modified Green's function. In a sense, this is non-perturbative because here you have a self-energy which is due to gauge field. So gauge field is included to an infinite order in these propagators. Another thing, another kind of source of gauge, another contribution of gauge field that you may think of would be some vertex correction. But it appears that this vertex correction, some of them don't contribute at all because your gauge field is transverse, and some of them appears to be not important. So at the leading order in the gauge field, you can neglect all vertex corrections. And then what you get is that you can take, you can calculate your beta function, and without gauge field, your beta function was basically this. It has a small coupling fixed point. It appears if you include your gauge field, what happens is that at leading order, your beta function is modified. And the modification is small, so it's of order of 1 over n. And that's an interesting result, because on one hand, this means that you still have a fixed point, and it's not shifted even to the order of 1 over n cubed. So it's not shifted to a very high order, but your scaling exponent appears to be modified. So basically, the rate at which you approach the fixed point is changed by your gauge field, and this would manifest this delta, this kind of scaling exponent being smaller, it would manifest itself in different physical quantities which are singular at low temperature, and this means that the singularities are softened. And this has a pretty easy interpretation in the sense that you may think that your gauge field destroys your coherent particles. You don't have any more coherent quasi-particle excitations due to gauge field. And this destruction, which is kind of mimicked by some dipole scaling limit, so it's weak in some sense, but this destruction leads to a weakening of your singularities. So when you look at different physical quantities, you may found that this kind of this delta manifests everywhere as a parameter which controls your divergences. So if you consider some scattering rates, it appears to be not of a Lorentzian form, but it has a cusp, and this cusp was controlled by delta. Your correction to the thermoconductivity would have a similar form, and your thermodynamical properties, for example, you can calculate heat capacity of the impurity or its spin susceptibility of the impurities, it's all would be controlled by delta. So again, the interpretation is that our delta becomes softer, this kappa comes from the gauge field, and this softening tells us that you don't have any more good excitations. So to summarize, we did we considered the spin half impurity and spin one spin limit. But in order to be able to do some calculations, we have to take this double scaling limit. And in this limit, your fixed point survives on one hand, but on the other hand, it's modified. Its properties are modified by the gauge field. So this is an interesting result, because if it holds in the physical limit, this would mean that you would get from such impurity, you would get on one hand critical behavior, from, and this could suggest you that there are some fermionic excitation in your system. But on the other hand, you would get a On the other hand, you would get a softening compared to the Fermi liquid. So if you do basically the same critical behavior in the Fermi liquid, which is in some sense difficult to do, but on the other hand, you can calculate all the exponents there. So your exponents in the case of spin liquid would be softer, and this may be seen as a signature of a gauge field. And then, in principle, you can use different probes, and the results for the divergences in this quantity can be calculated. So some open question remains here. So of course, it's a good question, like if the physical case when you have like spin one, one species of spin one and epsilon equal one, it can be extrapolated well from this limit. But that's kind of a usual drawback of one over n expansions, that when you do one over n, you have to extrapolate in principle to argue that it's you reproduce some physics. And then it's also interesting to find the models which would stabilize a spin on Fermi surface, like. And the interesting thing is that like if you have a 1D chain, there is a state where the Fermi surface exists. So in principle, there is something that I'm trying to do right now. So one of the things that I'm trying to do, I'm trying to study what can happen to the impurity of a 1D chain of a spin one. So let me give my kind of general outlook, and then I would ask you for the questions. So, like, the general outlook is that we consider like spin one spin liquid with fermionic excitations, and we first considered some interesting state of such a system when you have a pairing of spinons coexisting with a spinon Fermi surface and gives rise to very interesting physical properties. And another thing, we also considered the case of overstreamed Kondo problem, and we showed that in principle can probe spinons if you have all spinons ungapped. So it can probe spinons and it can probe a gauge field. So the possible further directions from here, again, as I mentioned, they can go either in the material-oriented questions. So what could be the realistic Hamiltonian for the material that I described, or what is a good description for it, or it can go also in a spin model direction. So in principle, there is this question about spin one chain. There is a possibility in principle to study if the spin liquid emerges using different numerics methods, and you can search for other spin models. So with this, I would like to ask you for questions about the second part, or maybe first part, or questions.
I have a question. So
yes.
I'm not familiar with this epsilon expansion, but it seems to be a very wild assumption, right? That you change the dispersion relation and then, I mean, have people, what's the state of the debate around this approximation? What?
So, yeah.
Sagir doesn't like it.
Well,
he's a friendly player.
That's a scientific argument.
Well,
the argument is that you have this sort of normal behavior by hand, not generating this.
Yeah, but on another hand, this is exactly why this thing works. That if you have this non-local behavior, you cannot generate anything more singular. So
exactly.
In this sense, it's kind of a stable thing.
But it's like a circular argument.
Yeah, it's a circular argument, but another thing, again, it's an advantage of this method that is stable in the sense that it's self-consistent. That if you get this 1 plus epsilon, you can't generate anything more singular of it.
Yeah.
And your like kind of Q terms would be not, Q squared terms would be not important.
But you can argue that, you know, the physical system can be reached from that expansion.
No, I mean, I don't think I have any argument that this can be reached. But it's like the same with some sense a problem of 1 over n, yeah? That when you do 1 over n,
no,
you
no,
also
I
do
think,
some...
No,
I think it's quite different. I mean, 1 over n, you're just taking quantum fluctuations, you know, by adding extra degrees of freedom, and here you just...
It's more transparent than 1 over n. You're doing this case, you have this... So
yeah, I mean, I would say maybe someone one day calculates like several loops of this epsilon expansion, and then maybe he can show that it converges or it gives sensible results. But so far, it's indeed kind of pretty strong approximation, I agree with you.
For the first part, you have this interlayer coupling, and naively, it looks like the atom between layer closer to the atom within one layer. Whether there's sense maybe their coupling are stronger or maybe at the same order.
Yeah, I mean, like, there is this paper by
J1, J2 you mentioned.
Yeah, there is this paper by Chen which uses this J1, J2 model. But again, like so far, no one has studied that I know about. No one has studied kind of. So, I mean, how you can go, like, in principle, you may try either to do some first principles and try to infer spin model from there.
Yeah, but by looking at the lattice, whether there's some sense, the J1, J2, whether their ratio, whether what's a reasonable ratio of J1, J2.
I think it should be smaller than one, but I don't think that it's possible to say more.
Interlayer is weaker.
Yeah, interlayer is expected to be weaker.
Yeah. The exchange, the shortest exchange path between
be
layers,
more.
I think, has an extra intermediate atom.
Yeah, there will be more oxygen, I think, just in the exchange path.
So we considered it in our theory, although it's not really a crucial ingredient of our theory. It has to be large, but you know, but I think you can make some argument in the 6HA material. You can make some argument that the interlayer exchange might actually be, you know. Not large, but maybe having some significant effect.
I see. But for CHB, this interlayer.
It's similar. This interlayer structure is similar in 6HB and 6HA.
So they're weaker. Yes, they're really weaker.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can show it here, but yeah,
it's from the app.
I cannot count it here, but I think like the exchange pass would be longer to this guy than to the guy in plane.
Yeah, there's definitely an extra intermediate.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not obvious here, and I don't have a nicer picture.
But let me expand to whether, maybe the power is compensated. I just wonder whether this can be said by a single crystal sample. See, is it 2D or 3D? I think that's the first question.
Yeah. But I mean, it's pretty, I don't know, like, I had the impression that it's not clear if these crystals would ever become available, because this is kind of something high pressure synthesis. So I don't know, like, then you have to learn how to do probably the synthesis in some IBM conditions or to grow single crystals of this guy. This is probably a terrible, difficult question, yeah?
Do we have single crystal for 6HA?
Yeah, so the 6HA, I think like it's pretty well studied and pretty well documented triangle-wise and ferment.
So it's 6HA is the has the structure you showed in the diagram, right?
The 6HA would have, I think, like, roughly speaking, it would have these planes to be on top of each other.
I see.
It would be not this second yet, just like on top of each other.
But do they have 6HA single crystals?
I would say so.
It's not high pressure.
But I mean, there are some papers from like 2000 which we were studying this guy. I think so.
So is it known what about the orbital ordering in the orbital part? Is it orbital ordered completely?
You mean this thing?
For example, yeah.
Yeah, so I think like in copper compounds, the orbital physics is important. And again, so in copper compound, there's some probably interplay of this orbital physics and this physics of when these guys flip with each other. Here, I mean, I don't know if it's important, but like somehow people usually say that it's a good spin one description is a good description.
In part two, you talk about the vertex corrections not being important.
Yes.
Is there a simple way of seeing this? Yes.
So yeah, in principle, you can kind of the very rough argument would be that some types of vertex correction would vanish whatsoever, and the point is that. Yes, I got there. No, it's almost. Yes. So some part of them would be vanishing, and the reason is like just simply that your gain shield is transverse. So here, and yeah, so basically it's very different from a usual case, because you have to remember that this thing is local. So there is an impurity sitting at one point. So the scattering on impurity doesn't conserve your momentum. So again, it's like coupling to something very local of the gauge field. And the gauge field is kind of, is a transverse. So for this, like for example, like practically speaking, here this green function is integrated over momentum. So this guy would vanish whatsoever. And for this guy, you may think of this guy as a roughly speaking, similar to the original contribution, but it's just like kind of overall is dressed by your gauge field. So these guys, in some sense, are also not important. So you can show that they are not important. So in some sense, it's like basically the same guys as here, you can see. But now each of these guys can dress by your gauge field on external legs. So it's like your quantum physics is happening, and the gauge field there is not important. But then like when you can have out scattering electrons there, like on their way, are influenced by a gauge field. So roughly speaking, that's kind of the picture. And that's the arguing why it shouldn't be as important as a gauge field kind of modifying your Green's function and destroying your single particle coherence.
Any other question?